In January 2009, celebrated author and activist Jeff Halper gave a press conference surrounding his views on the invasion of the Gaza Strip. This is part three of a three-part series.
Do you believe in a ceasefire?
I always believe in ceasefires.
But do you think it can really happen? Since no one seems to...
No. Yes and no. Look, we'd never had to get into this in the first place. Rockets and the retaliations and all this. Hamas is not a terrorist group. Hamas is a political group. It maybe uses tactics that we call terrorism or we don't like or whatever, but nevertheless, they're political. So that for Hamas, just like any other country, what's warfare? Warfare is when you can't get your political goals through normal political processes and you go into warfare. So that Hamas would cease all hostile activity toward Israel if there was what we call a political horizon. In other words, you could stop it all tomorrow morning. If the West, and the West of course really means the United States, it's kind of the only show in town really. If the United States would say, or whatever, the UN or the international community would say to Hamas, if you stop all resistance towards Israel, and they see this resistance, not terrorism, we will guarantee you in blood that there will be a genuine political process. We will guarantee not an Oslo process, we'll guarantee a genuine process of the sides talking to each other that will lead to a resolution. Then you would get a ceasefire. You're not going to get a ceasefire as long as the demand is that, all right, we stop fighting, Israel stays in control, Israel's occupation remains, sanctions remain, we suffer, but we can't shoot back. No, that's not going to work.
There were a lot of protests around the world. Is it for you the beginning of a renew movement, the one you hope to have, to see?
Yeah, I think also, like I said, in Europe and in other parts of the world, including North America, this conflict is starting to get to the dimensions of the anti-apartheid struggle. I feel that. Because again, I think it contains so many more global elements to it that it has that, you know, just like apartheid. I mean, what do we care what's happening in the end of Africa? Who cares? Well, because it touched a nerve. You know, it dealt with an issue of racism and apartheid that was a part of the world we're living in, and we had to do something about it. I think this is touching that nerve as well. And has to do, again, with the class of civilizations idea and with the racism and with oppression and with neocolonialism. And so I think it has, and like I said, it really does have an impact globally. So I think for those reasons, it's not just myopic or quixotic to say I'm here to mobilize, you know, the civil society, the people. I think that potential, if I was here trying to mobilize people around the world over baby seals in northern Canada, it doesn't have that potential. It's a localized thing, and a few little groups of people might be. But this is really, I think, something that people all over the world feel is something that's impacting on them. And so that's why I'm optimistic. It's a process, but I think the people are going to have a say in it.
So did we need that kind of war in Israel and between them to have this awareness rising in the society? Or, you know, is it a positive impact of this war?
I don't know if any war has a positive impact, but I think it's in a sense, I think what began as a localized conflict. You know, because I don't think Israel, I think when Britain went into Kenya, that set up a colony in Kenya, I don't think they expected that to become a big issue. These are local things, and there's the idea of colonial people, that, you know, these people are kind of primitive, and they don't know very much, and they're weak, and they're not that important. But I think in a more global reality that we live in, that isn't the case. And I think this became a global issue. Israel's trying to, what we say, put the genie back in the bottle. It's trying to say this is terrorism, this is a problem of Arabs that hate Jews. Yeah, they're trying to make it a localized conflict. And the genie's out already. And from that point of view, I think it isn't that anybody intended it that way, but this conflict developed into... There are some conflicts that... Look, Darfur is much more bloody than this is. But Darfur right now, unless you get China and oil involved, which is starting to happen, but right now Darfur is very localized because it's not at the center of the geopolitical things. Sometimes you have conflicts that are, and I think this is one of them.
Are we in a turning point for this conflict?
I think so. I think so. I think that this is unsustainable. That's why I think we can win this. And it's unsustainable for all the reasons we talked about, mainly because of its global impact. So I'm hoping, I wrote an article called, using that analogy, A Bone in America's Throat, in which I say that I don't have any hopes for Obama himself. You know, I mean, he's got the old Clinton people back, Dennis Ross and these people that failed 10 years ago. But I think there's a new international logic. And with the United States weakened the way it is, and the world much more multipolar, and with the rise of this civilizational political Islam, I think that in the end, the United States is going to have to find accommodation. The idea that we can beat the Muslims, we can have a war on terror and we can beat them, I think has been shown to be, it's simply not true. So in this new logic in which the United States, Canada, Europe have to begin to address these global issues in order to create a more stable international situation, I think this conflict, it has to be one of the first on the agenda that has to go. Because you're not gonna do that as long as this, like I was saying, it's like the bone in the throat. It's not as big as the cancer you have, but it's much more immediate. You can't, you know, you got a bone in your throat in a restaurant, you can't delay things, you know? And I think that's the place that this has, that in a sense, even symbolically, it's once you get rid of this conflict, it opens up possibilities of reconciliation and of getting to, and then you can get the issues of Afghanistan and issues of Iraq and Iran and so on. But you're not going to get to them unless you resolve this. That's really my argument.
How do you explain this sort of disproportionate amount of attention this is for that? As you pointed out, it's not the bloodiest conflict by far we have in the world. Why does it make the front page of every new Western newspaper?
This conflict?
Yeah.
Well, it's one of the things that makes news, I guess, is Jews. I mean, that's kind of this weird wrinkle in the whole thing. Because Jews also have a kind of a internationalist image. You know, Jews just aren't, you know, the Jews had the Holocaust, and Jews are very involved in science, and Jews are involved in the media, and in politics. You know, they're like a people that have a reputation that goes beyond simply a particular ethnic group. And things that happen to Jews make news. And I think that if the Palestinians had been fighting Irish people, you know, it might not have the same implications. But in a way, there's an expectation toward, you know, the Jews themselves, including, you know, the Israeli Jews, have made this a global issue. That's the way it's framed. It's framed as we're Western democracy. You know, we're the only democracy in the Middle East. We're, you know, the bulwark against Islamic barbarism and all. In other words, Israel has sort of made this a global thing. And then the fact that the Jews are involved, that the Jews involved with all the load that the Holocaust brings in and all that stuff, and then that comes into the discussion. Is this, so McCain says, America has to prevent another Holocaust. Whoa, that's a pretty that's a pretty big concept. I mean, all of that is what I think, you know, highlights this conflict, maybe more than some of the others. It's almost like the Jews are, I don't know how to say this exactly. The Jews are, in a way, the most dramatic expression of the West in some ways. I mean, the Jews are René Cassin was a very famous French Jew who was the author of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Jews have always been in the forefront of the human rights struggle, the civil rights struggle, the anti-apartheid struggle. They were the revolutionaries in Russia, you know, with Trotsky. They were Rosa Luxemburg, and they, you know, and in a way, and Mark Twain said something funny once. He said, Jews are just like everybody else, only more so. Whatever that means exactly. But in a sense, you know, the Jews have sort of expressed in a certain way the ideals and the revolutionary even or human rights sort of aspirations of people. So in some ways the Jews in a funny way have almost become the representation of the West in a good way. And then all of a sudden they do an about face. All of a sudden the Jews, who we looked at as being progressive and pioneers, and all of a sudden have an occupation. And all of a sudden, the Jewish community is defending occupation, defending the killing of Palestinians in Gaza. And I think people just don't know what to do with that. So it's almost like, are the Jews beginning, the organized Jewish community beginning to lead us back into this clash of civilizations? It's so un-Jewish. It's sort of so unpredictable that the Jews would be a part of that whole kind of a discussion. That I think in some ways that sort of make, because people are sort of looking at, I mean, I had this radio interview today on the local radio. The guys, you know, he's talking about, are you Jewish? You know, there's expectations of Jews that all of a sudden if Jews start to say things when Jews say something, maybe it means a little bit more. It carries more implications than other people because of those expectations. I don't know how exactly to explain it, but so I think that's a part of it.
When you cross Canada and you compare this to, you know, you are comparing to apartheid. What kind of reaction do you get from Jews in Canada?
Well, Jews don't. Well, it depends what Jews. I mean, again, you have a lot of progressive Jews.
I'm an exhibit. I just want to say that about that. What we've had since we've announced that Jeff's coming is we've had a number of phone calls from people in the Jewish community here, from mainstream people in the Jewish community who say, I want to come to the public meeting, I'm fed up, I can't support what Israel's done, it's completely unconscionable. So we see that the Jews, which were very monolithic, unfortunately, in 2006, in the incredibly horrifying invasion of Lebanon, which killed 1,000 people for no reason at all, except that they wanted to, we're seeing that Jews are moving. They are starting to really question what's going on and the top-down leadership of the Jewish community here in the Canadian Jewish Congress, which is appalling and right-wing and racist. I can't tell you enough, having lived across this country and being born and raised here, and having lived many places in this country, I can't tell you how the Jewish community tries to pretend it's monolithic when there's lots of people like me and others who are part of Canadians, Arabs, and Jews who want to see a change. And it's a very difficult situation because the Jews use the trump card of the Holocaust, and I'm afraid it's wearing pretty thin. The Arabs had nothing to do with the Holocaust. There wasn't one Palestinian involved in the Holocaust. Nobody in the Arab world set out to kill any Jews, and yet this is brought up time and time again as a justification for what's going on now. I believe that Jews have squandered their good titles and their good and the characteristics the world has put on them and that they've been delighted to accept in the last 40 or 50 years, or 60 years, since the Second World War. I feel now that Jews have squandered the fact that people respected them. And now we're facing a situation in which the state of Israel and what it does is unsupportable. And the racism, the killing of women and children, the calling everyone a terrorist who's not a Jew or part of the IDF is terrible. I don't know if people heard this morning on The Current. They had a general in the IDF who was an American originally, with an American accent. And this man said, well, you have to understand, he said to Anna Maria Tremonti, you have to understand that the UN is no longer the UN. The UN is controlled by people like Hamas. That's what he said. I urge you to go on the podcast and listen. He said, the UN is just a front for Hamas. Everybody's Hamas. Now, when the Jews and when Israelis start saying everybody's Hamas and saying that the UN and that the schools that they bombed, the two schools that Israel gladly bombed and killed, I don't know how many people, the low estimates are 60, the high estimates are way more.
I don't know if they gladly, but...
Okay, they didn't gladly bomb. Well, they bombed these schools, these UN schools, and now the Israeli Defense Forces are saying, well, they're really Hamas fronts. That's where Hamas gathers. That's where this gathers. That's where the terrorists are. So it's us and them, and it never had to be this way.
So how does that type of
wait, one second. There was just, she had one.
Can I just ask you, when did you decide to come here? Is it a coincidence that there were?
This was actually planned a number of months ago, this trip.
To come?
We do this international advocacy constantly.
To promote your book? No.
Well, I mean, no. It, actually, it was two things. I mean, it's always two things. One is the advocacy.
Yes.
And the other one is fundraising as well, because we also ask money. We're not going to ask any money from you guys. But, so fundraising is important because as a grassroots political organization, we need the support.
Yeah. So it's a good moment for you to come here.
Well, and then, of course, in a way, no. I mean, with all due respects to Canada, I mean, if I was going to choose this moment, I'd probably go to the United States.
And where are you going after that?
But I'm here for 2.5 weeks.
In Halifax?
I'm going from Halifax to Victoria.
Okay, how many cities do you?
I'm doing, Montreal, Ottawa, Toronto, Winnipeg, Vancouver, and Victoria.
And Hamilton.
And Hamilton, okay. And then on the way back through the States, I'm going to spend a week in Washington, D.C. to begin to make contacts with Obama people after the inauguration.
Okay. Thank you.
We have to go in five minutes. One more question.
Do you see this, you're both talking about a bit of a groundswell among Canadian Jews. Do you see that having an effect on our right-wing Israeli government?
Well,
what effect could it have?
No, the Israeli government listens to one voice. That's the American government. I mean, if Canada completely adopted a Hamas position, it wouldn't matter to Israel. I mean, it would matter in the sense that it might be a crack in the dam, but. And in fact, in the United States, what's interesting is not just the administration. It's not even the administration. It's more Congress. Because Congress puts limits around what the president can do. You know, when Bush, was pulled screaming and crying into this roadmap process that really Blair and some of the others in Europe figured out, and kind of... had Bush, he didn't really like it too much. But before the roadmap was announced, Congress already passed a resolution in both the Senate and the House to Bush saying, you don't touch the settlements in Israel and other things. So in Congress, there's bipartisan support for Israel. And that's Israel's trump card. So it doesn't even worry so much. Colin Powell was humiliated when he came to Israel after the attacks and, in 2002 and so on. Israel really doesn't care about, it cares about the administration, but its real trump card is Congress. And so it all kind of gets reduced down to Congress from the whole world. So that I don't know if the Canadian voice is that important, but from the point of view of American decision makers, and Europeans as well. Canada is an important part of the international community. if there begins to be voices speaking out, that means something. For example, in Europe, let me just give one thing and then I'll let you go. There's no people or government more sympathetic to the Palestinians than the Irish. Irish are just there. But the Irish say, look, we're just one small people in Europe. You know, we can't speak out. So what I'm trying, when I'm there, what I'm trying to say is, look, you've got, there's Ireland. And Ireland has a voice, you know, from all the Irish experience. I mean, they, you know, they have a certain moral voice to this as well. But in Europe, you've got Ireland, you have Sweden, you've got Spain, Malta, Cyprus, Greece. I mean, not France and Germany, but, you know, you've got... So if these little countries would just start to speak out, they could crack this kind of unified silence, in a way, or support for Israel, that would then allow other countries to begin to speak out. So that's really what we're looking for. If we could get the best case scenario, it's not going to happen with this government, but if you could get a Canadian government to speak out somehow, that would... It's not by itself maybe that significant, but it'd be very significant in again cracking this wall of support for Israel. And then I think you saw it with Jimmy Carter. When Jimmy Carter used the word apartheid, there was a firestorm. But now the word, I mean, somebody asked me about apartheid. I mean, I use it in a very precise way, but I don't feel tremendous resistance to the word apartheid anymore after Carter's book, because Carter kind of broke through. You know, once you break through and the word starts to be used, then it becomes a part of the discourse. So if Canada would take a lead and begin to legitimize criticism of Israeli policies, I mean, and you have the right to do that, you've got troops in Afghanistan and so on, then I think, you know, that would be very significant in terms of breaking through and getting more of a debate on this issue.
I'm sorry, we have to go. We have to go.
Thank you
much.
Thank
you for coming.